It is 26 and a half after the hour, a Tuesday morning, another Tuesday morning. Seems to come up every now and then, every 7 days or so. And that means a visit with Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and an awfully good friend of the station here after all these years. We've learned so much from him, but nothing compares with his series on the Book of Daniel, which is, we're in part 10. This is like a TV series, kind of, you know? This is
yeah, it's a TV radio series.
Well, yes, it is. And today things get very heavy as we get into chapter 9 of the Book of Daniel. Daniel has long been an interesting book to me, but you're bringing to light the intensity of things that happened and presenting Daniel to us. And this is the thing that I never realized. It portrays the history of Gentile civilization from the time of Babylon to today, or tomorrow, or whenever.
Or tomorrow, yes.
Whenever Christ comes.
It goes all the way till the fullness of the Gentiles comes in.
and Daniel's dealing with that in chapter 9 a little bit. This is really, I'd have to call, heavy duty stuff. I'm not sure how to proceed, so I will just hand you the mic and let us know what's up with Daniel in chapter 9.
All right. Well, let's set the stage. The order of the chapters isn't the chronological order, as some might suspect. You know, that's not the case. But this vision, which is the 70 weeks vision in chapter 9, actually is a year, it's a year after the Babylon falls to the Persians. And so you may remember that Cyrus, overtook Babylon without a battle and sneaking into the city of Babylon. He then took over, and then Darius was set in charge over.
And again, Darius was not a person, not a general, but a position identified, an office under Cyrus, correct?
That's correct. Yep. That's correct. So this vision then is Babylon fell in 539 BC, and Daniel gets a visit from an angelic being in 538 BC. And so why does he get this vision? Well, this is chapter 9, and kind of have to jump before we jump into Daniel, and we're not going to read the first part of this, but we are going to explain the first part of it. So Daniel chapter 9 is actually broken out into three parts, and the first part is Daniel's prayer. So what does Daniel realize? So after the Medes and the Persians take over, he realizes that the 70 years of captivity that God has proclaimed over Israel has come to an end. And it's time for the Israelites to go back to Babylon. So from verse 1 through 19, Daniel is petitioning God, saying, Lord, we have sinned. We deserve this. Please forgive us, show us mercy because of your name. Your name has to be exalted, and the only way your name is going to be exalted is if we return to Babylon, because that's what your word
says.
Well,
return to Israel and Jerusalem.
Yeah, I mean, return to Jerusalem. That's correct. And so, verses 1 through 19 is, and it's worth folks reading, because it's an intercessory prayer. It's an intercessory prayer for the Israelites and petitioning God to keep his promise, which he will, obviously, and which he did, keep his promise to return back to Israel. Then the next section in Daniel 9 is Gabriel's visit. So he gets another visit from Gabriel. Gabriel is the messenger archangel, if you will. And Gabriel comes to him in verses 20 to 23 and says, hey, from the first time you petitioned, God heard you and basically sent me to you to tell you things so that you can understand. Gabriel's previous visits, Daniel didn't really understand, because Gabriel was the one, if you remember from last week, was the one who basically explained the ram and the goat vision that he had before. And Daniel, scratching his head, he's very upset and he really couldn't possibly understand, because he doesn't know these kingdoms that are going to come after. I mean, he knew the Medo-Persian kingdom, but he didn't know the Greek or the Roman or the other kingdoms that were going to come after. And so now Gabriel appears to him again. Gabriel's saying, hey, I'm going to show you a vision. I'm going to give you some instructions here, and hopefully you'll understand. And then to finish up the chapter in verses 24 through 27, Gabriel then starts explaining the 70 weeks. And so with that kind of a little introduction, let's just, I'm going to try to pick this up here. I'm skipping a whole bunch. Usually when I give this, this takes me a whole hour just to go through half of Daniel. Mm. So I'm skipping through it. And so let's maybe start with verse 20, where Gabriel comes and visits with Daniel. And Daniel says, while I was speaking and praying, confessing my sin and the sins of my people Israel, and presenting my plea before the Lord, my God, for the holy hill of my God, while I was speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the first, came to me, touched me in swift flight at the time of the evening sacrifice. So you got to remember, at this point, there is no evening sacrifice, because there is no sacrifice going on at the temple, and Daniel certainly isn't in Jerusalem. He's in Persia at the time. And so, but Daniel is keeping the practice of praying at the evening sacrifice.
Well, let's speculate just a little bit here too, because the Israelites have been in Babylon for some time, and it evolved into quite a study, a research, an intellectual center for the Hebrews generally. I wonder if they didn't set up kind of a parallel system, maybe even underground, that they would at least observe the times for the temple times and the temple pattern. Now, the reference, I think, to the holy hill of my God is a reference to Zion, is it not?
It's a reference to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so it they did have the call to prayer in the evening, but it was maybe informal, or maybe it was just practiced by going through the motions. But somehow this had to be all kept alive in the minds of the Israelites.
Oh, for sure. And it's certainly, the four boys that are now older, mm-hmm. much older, but by this time they're 7 years older, as a matter of fact. And so, yeah, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, and Daniel definitely would have been practicing the same type of things, that because they were righteous and practicing Jews. And so, yes, they would have continued with their prayers three times a day. And the evening sacrifice, of course, would be a time of prayer for them. So this is that time, and Gabriel comes and visits with him. So in 22, he said, he made me understood, speaking with me and saying, O Daniel, I have now come out to give you insight and understanding. And Daniel must be thinking, well, that's good, because I have no understanding at this point. At the beginning, listen to this. At the beginning of your pleas for mercy, a word went out. And so who sent that word? Gabriel is saying, at the beginning of your prayer, right? I mean, and if you read the prayer, it's a long prayer. So this, you know, this was not something that was just a couple of minutes long. I mean, it's a long prayer. And so he says, at the beginning of your pleas for mercy, a word went out, and I have come to tell it to you. For you are greatly loved. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. All right. So there's the word went out, and the word that went out came from the word. That is Jesus, mm-hmm. right? Jesus is the word. So Jesus then most likely tells Gabriel, hey, go give my beloved Daniel this word. So you would anticipate, you would think that Daniel then, the word that Gabriel has for Daniel is, hey, Daniel, we heard your plea. Your people are going to go back to Jerusalem, and everything's going to be fine if Israel just, you know, follows in my statutes and commands. That's not the word that Gabriel brings to Daniel. Mm. It has nothing to do with that, as a matter of fact. It's not necessarily another vision, but it is an interesting word that he brings. So let's talk about who's a friend and who's a beloved of God. Well, in Genesis 19, it says that Abraham is a friend of God. So Abraham's a friend of God. Abram is called his name before his name is changed to Abraham, is called from out from the land of Ur, and then he's taken to the promised land. Abram doesn't know where he's going. God's just showing him basically a step at a time and saying, I'm going to give you this land, and I'm going to give it to your descendants, and I'm changing your name to Abraham, which Abram means father. Abraham means father of many nations. So he's a friend of God. We are also called friends. His disciples were called, and you now called my friends. Jesus tells his disciples about his second coming. So because his disciples are his close friends, if you will, they get to know about the second coming. Because they asked, I mean, his disciples asked, you know, when are you coming back? And so he tells them in Matthew 24, which is another study all into itself. Okay, now, because Daniel and John are not just friends, but they're beloved friends of God, they were given visions of the end times. So Daniel has visions of the end times. He obviously came first, but John gets a vision of the end times, and hence we have the book of Revelation.
Does this mean that when John says that John writes, or his disciples write of him, that he was the disciple, the one that Jesus loved, that indicates that he's setting up for prophecy? So, I mean, that's a code all of a sudden. It's more than just a flat statement that he loved me, but I'm in a special category now.
Right. And of course, you know, God loves all of his children, but it depends on our heart as to whether or not we get called beloved. Now, there's only two in the Bible who have been called beloved, and that is Daniel and that is John. Hmm. And both of them are given visions of the end times. So there's a special place that God says, okay, I can trust you with what is yet to come, and that you will communicate it accurately to my people. And so, yes, they have a they definitely have a special place, and they get revelation, special revelation that others aren't privileged to. Okay, so then we have this 70 weeks vision, and the scope is in verse 24. The 69 weeks is in verse 25. The interval is in verse 26, and the 70th week is in verse 27. We probably won't get to 26 and 27. Maybe we will. We'll see. Because the 69 weeks are amazing, and we'll get to that. So let's just jump in with verse 24, and it says, 70 weeks are decreed about your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to put an end to sin, and to atone for iniquity, and to bring an everlasting righteousness, to seal both vision and prophet or prophecy, and to anoint a most holy place. What does that speak to you? Putting 70 weeks are decreed for your people and your holy city. Your people, who's Daniel's people? I mean, obviously, it's the Jews.
The Israelites. Seven and 70 are representative of a sense of completion, the end of a cycle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So 77, I mean, seven is completion, perfect, finished, we're done. And so this is 70 weeks, and we're going to talk about that. But in this verse, it's 70 weeks are decreed about your people, that is Daniel's people, who are the Jews, and your holy city, and the holy city refers to Jerusalem, to finish the transgression, to put an end to sin. When is an end to sin coming?
Well, not yet.
Not yet, because obviously there is still sin, a lot of sin in the world, and it's going to get worse, right? So the end of sin comes when Jesus returns, his second coming. So that's when the end to sin and the atonement for iniquity and to bring an everlasting righteousness.
Let's take a look at 70 weeks. Why weeks? Not months, not years, but weeks. Is it because is that like saying 70 times 7? 7 days times 70?
70, yes, we're going to get to that.
Oh, I'm okay. Sorry. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting to the 70 weeks. So anyway, Gabriel is saying there is a certain period of time here on earth that you know, there's going to be sin, and then there's going to be an end put to it. And so there will be no more vision, no more prophecy, and at that point, because there's no need for it anymore, and to anoint the most holy place. And the most holy place then will be the temple in Jerusalem, where Jesus himself will sit. Jesus's temple is not in heaven. Jesus's throne, you know, God the Father's on throne in heaven, and Jesus sits at the right hand of God the Father. But Jesus's throne is actually on the throne of David, which obviously is in Jerusalem.
And that's what the Jews were looking for, was someone to resume the reign of David. in their vision for the Messiah. So are we must be talking about his seat in the temple in the New Jerusalem.
That's exactly right. We are. So that's how far this vision goes, right? It's a pretty broad vision. And so let's talk about weeks. Okay, we've got the Sabbath, which is the seventh day of the week. And so that's not what we're talking about. We've got the Feast of Weeks in Leviticus, for example. Leviticus 23 talks about the Feast of Weeks, but it's only a week. And then we've got the weeks, the months, if you will, from Nisan to Tishri in Exodus 12, in Leviticus 23. But that's not what we're talking about. And then we got the sabbatical years for the land. And so these weeks that we're talking about, or years. All right. They're a week. A week then is seven years. All right, let's jump in to verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall, even the troublous or troubled times. That's the New Testament, or the King James Version. So we've got this 60. So if you add that up, you got 7 weeks, and then you have 62, which is 62 weeks. 62, a score is 2 is 20. So 3 is 60 plus 2 weeks is 62 weeks. So this whole thing is describing 69 weeks. What's so special about this 69 weeks? Well, Gabriel is telling Daniel that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, when did that happen?
Now we're talking about the return from Babylon, the first time, the first crew of refugees that attempted to rebuild the temple?
We're not in the, we're going to, so we can talk about that. Okay. So that is a marking place, So if we could figure out that from the time of going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem, that's the starting place, until the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 69 weeks of years. Okay. If we know the starting point, we can then figure out the ending point. And what's the ending point? Your Messiah is going to come on that, as it turns out, day. Okay, so let's unravel this. So 69 weeks, 69 times 7 is 483 years, right? Mm-hmm. So from the commandment to restore Jerusalem to the Messiah, the Prince, is 483 years. But when was the decree to build Jerusalem? Cyrus didn't give it in Ezra, chapter 1. Darius didn't give it in Ezra chapter 6. Artaxerxes in 558 BC didn't give it, as in stated in Ezra 7, but Artaxerxes in 445 BC in the book of Nehemiah, he was the one to say, here, You know, Nehemiah, if you remember in the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah comes to the king and basically asks the king at the potential of him being killed that, look, the people need to go back. They need to rebuild Jerusalem. And may I be excused for a period of time so I can help go rebuild the city? So Artaxerxes says, yes. In matter of fact, I'm going to give you supplies and entourage, and you go back and you go build, because he loved Nehemiah. And so he was in favor of that. And that's when the decree to rebuild the city actually came and came out. So when was that? Well, looking back in our history, the decree of Artaxerxes Longimanus was on March 14th, 445 BC. March 14th. Okay, so now we have a starting point. And where is all this information coming from? It's actually coming from a book written by Sir Robert Anderson back in 1894. And the title of the book is The Coming Prince. So if anybody really wants to dig into this, then the book entitled The Coming Prince by Sir Robert Anderson explains all of this in quite detail. And he goes through the calculation as to, when the prince, the Messiah, the prince was coming. Okay, so we've got to convert, our year, for example, how many days are in a year? And what are we talking about? Because it makes a difference.
Well, 360 was the Jewish year, right?
Exactly. Okay. So it's the 300. And in the old times, 360 was a year. That didn't get changed to 365 and a quarter until, much later on. And so, and there is an event that possibly caused the reason why that year, the year was changed from 360 to 365, an actual physical event that probably took place during the time of Joshua's longest day, because it's hypothesized, and you can, from astronomical point of view, you can see that Mars actually came into close proximity with the Earth, and the angular momentum of the two exchanged about the time when Joshua's longest day was. So there was a physical astronomical event that took place that slowed down the Earth's rotation around the sun.
Meaning more daylight.
More days in a year.
Yeah.
So the orbit around the sun slowed down by 5 1/4 years. Mm-hmm. All right. I can see we are not going to get through this. Anyway, so taking 69 times 7 times 360, that gives us 173,880 days. So we know the number of days. Now all we have to do is figure out when that was. And it turns out that if you do the calculations and if you include leap years, because there were leap years, obviously thrown in during that time. If you go from 445 BC to 32 AD, that's 173,740 days. From March 14th to April the 6th was 24 days. And if you include the leap years, it's 116 days. That's 173,880 days. Now, when was that day? That was that day, April 6th, 32 AD, was the triumphal entry of Jesus into Jerusalem on the donkey, as was prophesied.
Not only do we get prophecy, we get a math lesson, too. We've learned a whole lot from Don today. Don, well, let's leave it there as a good tease for next week. We'll get back into this, and because there are more days to come and lots more history to relate to you and tying the whole package together. Don, we'll look to you to do that as we rejoin you next week, next Tuesday. Okay. Thank you for what you bring. Yeah. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com. We recommend that wholeheartedly to you. There you'll find scientific information that supports, explains, and enables you to teach biblical creation. Spend some time over there, creationmoments.com. Don, we'll see you in about 7 days. Years, just 7 days, okay?
There you go. Oh, okay. All right. There you go.